The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We are getting a lot of Beth Karras lately. Not mad about it.
Yeah, we saw her in Natalia Grace, and now she's here, and she's over it. As she should be. This is a horrible story. God, Ashton Kutcher's here. Like, what?
Hi, girl.
Hey, girl.
Oh, my goodness. Fam, heads up. Next virtual drag bingo is on Saturday, June 15th with the amazing Schwa.
Amazing. Happy Pride, everyone.
Happy Pride. Oh, my stars. If you want to join the drag bingo, you got to join the Patreon. Everybody at the $5 level and above is welcome to join us for drag bingo that we do every month.
Yep.
You also get over 450 full ad-free bonus episodes.
Yeah, so it's the episodes on the regular feed and also, like, Natalia Grace and Quiet on Set and the Jinx 2.
A Twin Flame. I almost said Eternal Flames.
Love the Bangles. Love Has Won.
Yeah. The Jinx 2, wild.
Oh, my God.
Wild.
Oh, my God.
Patreon.com/TrueCrimeObsessed, or just go to the website, click on the Patreon link.
Yeah.
Girl, what are we talking about?
Notorious, the Hollywood Ripper. And Beth Karras is our host once again.
Los Angeles, a city full of dreamers and beautiful women.
He targeted four young women, a serial killer who would come to be known as the Hollywood Ripper.
When a serial killer comes to Hollywood,
Ashton Kutcher was the last person that spoke to her.
The night of the Grammys, he calls her a couple of times. She doesn't pick up.
They track his method.
He stalks his prey.
Late at night attack, multiple stabbings, no sexual assault.
The killer left behind no DNA evidence.
They track his motive.
He's imagining what it would be to be a part of that existence. Then the fantasy turns to rage and hate.
Then
she finds him on top of her.
They track him down.
She was able to kick him. He left his blood on her carpeting, a breadcrumb right down the steps across the alley.
Snapped Notorious Hollywood Ripper.
All right, we open with Beth Karras. She's giving her ode to Los Angeles. She says, Los Angeles, California. Every day, young people from across the country arrive here hoping to make their dreams come true. Some yearn to become movie stars. Others want to make it big in the music industry or the world of high fashion. But not everyone who comes here shares those types of hopes and dreams. Some are just coming to escape their past.
And some just,
past.
Like, were born there and they're accountants.
I know.
Like, some people just go to work every day and they're just like, oh, God, the city of dreams.
I feel like if you were born in Hollywood and you don't want to do one of those things, wouldn't you leave? Or just, like, move to another part of L.A.? Like, Hollywood especially feels, I don't know.
I think it's okay for people to coexist.
You think people can do what they
live
want?
Live their lives
it's
and
not up
do
to
what
me.
They want? No.
Okay, great.
So it's February 21st, 2001. It's Grammy night.
Are you ready for Ashton Kutcher to come over?
Not really.
Okay.
He's such an asshole in this.
I know.
Ashley Ellerin is our first victim here. She's 22 years old. She's getting ready for a date with Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah. Who they call a TV star, by the way.
Well, it was that 70s show.
Oh, you're right. He was a TV star.
Yeah. Let's go. We'll get into the Ashton part of it. But we start with, it's 9 a.m. the next day, and Jennifer DeSisto, who is Ashley's roommate, opens the door of the house and discovers Ashley Ellerin has been murdered.
And murdered brutally. And she immediately calls 911. We meet Detective Tom Small, who I love. He's great in this.
He describes a very gruesome crime scene. Ashley was in the middle of getting ready.
Her curling iron was sitting on the toilet. The bathtub was still damp. Her hair still looked as if it had not been dried yet. She had her hair dryer on the counter, so she was getting ready.
Everyone knows the toilet has two uses. The most important one is that it's a place for our hair tools.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Anyone has gotten ready. Please, everyone, it's if you can't, okay. Especially if you're in a hotel, you got your makeup on the sink.
Yeah.
The hair iron or curl or whatever you got is on the toilet.
We expect too much of you. We expect too much
of you.
It's a lot.
Sometimes, like, your whole makeup bag is just in the sink.
I know.
Like, you're just dumping it out. We navigate. We can get it ready anywhere.
Yeah.
Anyone who gets ready, we can get ready anywhere.
I have just recently started wearing tinted moisturizer. That's okay. As far as I've gone into the world of male makeup.
You got some SPF in there, I hope.
Yeah, I don't know. But what I do know is even that is a lot. There are days I'm like, I can't do the tinted moisturizer.
And because you never wash it off. I'm like, you took it off before bed, right? To moisturize and do your skincare routine at night?
What do you mean? Like, with what, though? Like, what do you use for that?
We'll deal with it later.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a very, very, very brutal crime scene. And it felt personal because it was a stabbing. And Ashley was stabbed over 47 times.
I mean, it just really is awful. There's defensive wounds on her hands and arms. Her throat was cut. And Detective Tom has, like, the horrible task of contacting her family.
Right.
And we learn, like, she was their only daughter. Like, I don't know. That always just makes me so sad.
Yeah. So we learned a little bit about Ashley here. Yeah. In September of 2000, she moved to L.A. to pursue a career in the fashion industry. And she was going to the L.A. Fashion Institute in downtown L.A.
And she fits right into L.A. right away. She's got tons of friends. She's going out all the time. Everyone just loves
she
Ashley.
She was doing great. She was thriving in school. She was doing what she loves. She just moved to this new city like six months ago.
Somehow she meets Ashton Kutcher. Like, she's hanging out in those circles.
Right.
You know?
And one more thing about the crime scene, which is important. While it is a very gruesome crime scene and there is blood everywhere, like on the walls, on the ceiling.
We had bloody shoe prints that were heading out toward the front door.
But despite all the blood, other than the shoe print, the killer left behind no hair, fingerprints, or DNA evidence that could tie them to the scene.
There's no DNA evidence whatsoever.
Yeah.
And Detective Tom is like, so when they're investigating the crime scene, they're going to start with Ashley and her body and then work their way out.
Right. And they say they immediately eliminate robbery as a motive because there was $300 in cash laying in plain sight. She had her jewelry on. They rule out sexual assault. She was not sexually assaulted.
No forced entry.
And no forced entry. So she had to have known her attacker.
So the cops are like, we have to talk to Ashley. They say her friends and associates. Like, can we relax? Talk to the people who loved Ashley. Can we call them that? Now, this is when Ashton Kutcher calls the police. Was this before or after he vouched for Danny Masterson? Not entirely sure.
Did he vouch for Danny Masterson?
You don't remember the stupid video with him and Mila Kunis, like, apologizing but not apologizing?
I think, right, they apologized for apologizing for Danny
letter?
Masterson. Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Give me a fucking break.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ashton calls the cops. And he's like, I called a student.
Ashton calls the cops. That fuck. Sorry, that's a Rent thing, you guys. Sorry. Yeah.
He calls and he's like, look, I called you right away. I just want to like let you know where I am in this whole thing. I met Ashley a few times. We liked each other. He had just gotten out of a relationship. She was kind of taking it slow. They were like dating.
But the thing was, we're going to learn Ashton Kutcher had a date with Ashley that night. He was supposed to pick her up at 8 p.m. He doesn't show up until 10:45.
Well, I just want to slow down on this. Like, Ashton has been on That 70s Show for a few years. This is 2001. He was very, very famous.
Very, very famous.
Like, this is 2001. I looked it up. That 70s Show started in 1998. So he'd been on TV for a while. He also just did Dude, Where's My Car? Like, 2001, he was an incredibly famous person.
I loved Dude, Where's My Car?
Did you?
I saw it in the movie theater, and
you
I fucking loved
it.
Loved
Do you
Dude,
know
Where's
I don't think I've seen
Dude, Where's My Car?
Did they find the car?
Hot Tub Time Machine?
No.
What?
I know.
You've never seen Hot Tub Time Machine?
No.
Wow.
I'm such a loser. I'm like, there was a time in my life where I was like a little cool for a few years. Not anymore.
Dude, Where's My Car is great.
Do they find the car?
I can't remember. Okay. But Dude, Where's My Car is really good. But the whole thing is, he shows up 2.5 hours late for this date, peers into the window and sees what he thinks is wine on the floor.
It's so rude calling. Because he calls her at 8:24.
Yeah.
Saying, like, they have casual plans to hang out at 8 o'clock. At 8:24, he calls her to say, I'm running late. That's an asshole move, number one.
Yes.
Then he doesn't get there till 10:45. So, like, I know it's 2001 and you just did Dude, Where's My Car, but that is a shitty asshole move.
So Ashton tells the cops, I can't believe we're talking about Ashton Kutcher.
Well,
so wild.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, he tells the cops, he pulled up, sees her car, everything looks normal. He knocks on the door, there's no answer because you're 3 hours late.
Yeah.
Like, she's still gonna be home waiting for your ass, please.
He tried to call, nothing happened. He looked through the side window and you could see the hardwood floor. So he sees things on the floor that he described as looking like wine. Maybe somebody spilled something. That was his thought.
But he assumes someone had spilled wine.
But it's like, okay, he's like, he says to the cops, I didn't think anything of it. Okay, so you're 3 hours late. She's not answering. Her car's there. The lights are on and there's wine on the floor. Here's what I think happened.
Yeah.
He's eliminated as a suspect, but here's what I think happened. He shows up. He finds her. He panics. He is selfishly thinking what this is going to do to him and his career. He lets someone else find her body and then he calls the cops after the fact.
Wait a second.
I'm not buying the red wine bullshit for a heartbeat.
You think Ashton Kutcher saw the body and left it there?
Yep. That's my theory. Total opinion. I just don't buy, because we just heard there's blood on the ceiling.
Did you see the look on my face? Yeah.
There's blood everywhere. But, I think a little red wine spilled, but also she's not answering. And there's, even if it was just red wine, that's still a red flag. Her car is there. She's not answering. Red wine is on the carpet.
And we also know how brutal the crime scene was. My guess is maybe more like he honked from the car, didn't ever go up to the porch or whatever.
Why lie about the red wine then, if you didn't even see anything?
My thing is, let's assume he's telling the truth. Can you imagine?
I'm not going to assume that.
Okay. Just to play devil's advocate for 1 second, I'll assume he's telling the truth.
Okay.
And the next morning he finds out that he was at a murder scene. On the other side of that door was a brutally murdered body of a person that he knows and cares about. And like, and I just can't imagine.
And would think it's going to ruin his career.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to give Ashton Kutcher maybe a little humanity here and say, like, I'm assuming that he cared that this person was dead.
I think that's why he eventually called.
Yeah.
But
I think he called as soon as he could to be like, it wasn't me.
Right.
Oh my God, girl, it wasn't me.
But like, we don't get. How does he know?
I think we're assuming it was on like the local news or who knows? Yeah, yeah.
So I just, based on what we know about the crime scene, this call feels weird to me.
Yeah.
And I don't buy the red wine thing. And I think he thought about his career selfishly and thought like this would be a total fucking circus.
You know who would know? Stacey Keenan, assistant DA, Los Angeles. We got to get Stacey on
this. Phone call shady.
Stacey, what happened?
I'm not buying it.
I know. I don't
think he did it. We know who did it.
Yes.
But I don't. That is not making sense
to me.
And
honestly, just the fact that his name is connected to this case in any way is major. It's one of the major things in the... It's literally how they dub the killer the Hollywood Ripper.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's like, it's 2001. I'm Ashton Kutcher. It's Grammy night. And I think his first call was his publicist.
You're probably right.
That's what I think.
So Kutcher is ruled out as a suspect. But now detectives learn that there was another man in Ashley's life. It's a guy named Mark Durbin. He's the apartment manager and had also been at Ashley's apartment that night while she was getting ready for the date with Ashton.
And he has access to her apartment because he's the apartment manager.
Right. Remember, like, no forced entry.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
He was one of the few people who might have access to Ashley's home. He was one of the last people to see Ashley, but also he had a girlfriend as well. He was trying to essentially hide Ashley from his girlfriend.
He, like, had a girlfriend at the same time as he was, like, dating Ashley and was trying to hide Ashley from the girlfriend.
But, like, why are men? You're hiding Ashley.
I know.
Why are you doing that to Ashley? Why are you doing that to the girlfriend? Like, can people just be, like,
it
grow
is
up.
Really ridiculous.
Grow up. Show up on time for your date and
I
grow
mean,
up.
These shorts that I'm wearing are very short.
They put the short in shorts.
They are very short shorts.
Very short.
And I'm going to be, I wasn't expecting it.
Because you didn't realize you were going to be sitting in
or, like, being as animated in my sitting.
You're fidgeting a lot.
I'm just pulling them down.
I don't know.
Like, they're really hiking up, GP.
It's like the first 75-degree day we have short shorts on. Like,
these shorts are real short.
They're real short. Like, even standing, they're short.
Do they look good on me?
They look great.
You know,
but it's hard to be, you know, sitting,
know.
Doing what we're doing in those kinds of shorts.
It's they're real short, everybody.
Oh, God. In a good way. Except now that you're uncomfortable. How lovely to be a woman.
God.
So the cops search his apartment, this apartment manager guy.
Yeah.
They turn the place upside down. They didn't find anything connecting him to the murder. So he's ruled out by police.
And I made the note and I was like, really? Because he looks pretty good for this for me.
Well, let's talk about furnace guy.
Okay.
The furnace guy. So Ashley and her friend Chris are changing a flat tire. And this guy approaches them out of nowhere, offers to help, but doesn't help. He just creepily hits on Ashley and completely ignores Chris, the friend.
We're going back to like a few months before the murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he just starts, he's stalking Ashley.
Soon after that, he starts showing up more, unannounced. This went on for weeks. He was always asking for Ashley. He was making phone calls to the house. At a few of her parties, he started showing up. He wasn't invited. Nobody knew him, but he showed up.
showing up uninvited to her parties.
This is what I don't understand. Like, he's at her parties and people are just letting him be there.
People are like, oh, it's Mike the furnace guy again.
And he's like, honestly, walking into her apartment, like not even knocking, just like walking in and like appearing in the living room. Mm-hmm. Like, this is insane behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. So he would like sit outside her house in his creepy furnace truck.
Yes. Yes. And people are saying that, like, remember, this is 2001. This is before social media. So like when the cops are trying to like look into this guy, nobody knows anything about him. He's the guy at the party that nobody talks to. And so nobody gets his last name. Nobody knows anything about where he lives. He's just like the furnace guy who was around all the time.
But no one wants to ruffle his feathers either because he's creepy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, like, what harm can he do? There are 40 other people at this party. Like, he's a creep. Like, that's that. You're kind of weighing your options
here. He also doesn't look that out of place. He's like super buff. He's kind of good looking. It's LA where like that's kind of currency. So like, I feel like that's another way he was kind of able to stay in the circle. If he looked like me, they'd be asking questions.
Oh, please. Those shorts. But Justin, another one of her roommates, notices this truck at like 6:30 in the morning. And then Mike, the furnace guy, like, just walks right in. And Justin's like, excuse me, hi? Like, what are you doing here? And he's like, where's Ashley? I have to see Ashley.
And no one says to us, he made Ashley uncomfortable. You know, like, we don't know. Like, are they friends? Are they not friends?
Well,
like,
Justin kicks him out. Justin,
I mean, it's 6:30 in the morning. Get out of my house.
And you're like
course.
Yelling that you need to see Ashley. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And then after Ashley's murder, nobody sees Mike anymore. Like, how convenient.
He just takes off.
So this is months after Ashley's murder. Mike, the furnace guy, shows back up.
And Durbin, the guy that's like the boyfriend with the girlfriend who was there the night of the Kutcher was going to be
cleared.
That guy who was cleared says he runs into this guy. Now, this does tell us something because Durbin sees him and he's like, oh, hey, Mike, the furnace guy. So, like, Durbin is being nice to him. So it doesn't seem like they hated this guy.
Yeah.
He's being nice to him, and he's like, hey, Mike, the furnace guy, how you doing? Where you been? I haven't seen you in a while.
Mike had a different look. He had frosted tips on his hair. His hair was spiked, and he grew a goatee. And he says, Mike, I'm not Mike. I'm Tony. But he's driving.
Wait a second. Mark Durbin is sure that was...
He's absolutely positive. That's the guy I met.
Mike.
And he's like,
you must be mistaken. I'm Tony.
Tony.
So Tony, air quotes Tony, not his real name Tony, is bragging about how he got hit by this enormous truck and he's suing for millions of dollars.
Now, just for the record, Durbin is like, hey, Mike, the furnace guy. He's like, I'm definitely not Mike. I am Tony. But and you don't know me.
Lawsuit?
We've never met before, but guess what just happened
to me? I'm going into litigation, girl. And the manager's like, bye. Like, what is going on?
I know.
But now, so like, this is something that you can look up in 2001. Like, no social media, but this is a real fact. So Detective Tom starts looking for collisions, as he calls them.
Because Detective Tom is trying to find Mike, the furnace guy. We all know that Tony and Mike are the same person.
Right.
And Detective Tom is like, wait, you say that he's like suing somebody over a car crash?
Let me look up
every single car crash in Los Angeles County.
So Detective Tom finds this accident.
Yes.
1999, some guy's poor dog gets clipped by a car. Detective Tom is like, Jillian, he's fine. The dog got right up.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Is a champ. Had all the treats and all the pets that night.
I feel like Detective Tom looked into the camera. They're like, have you heard that podcast with the gay guy and the girl? She's going to want to know.
Hold for a second. You know what? If he really listened, we know the dog's name. Doesn't matter.
I know.
It's fine. Thanks a lot, Tom. Thanks for nothing.
Damn.
Not Tom the editor. You're doing great. Tom the editor is doing great. You're doing great.
Oh, whew. Thanks, guys.
But the guy's name is Michael Gargiulo.
Yes, this is the bad guy.
This is the guy. So now, but we have all his information now.
Yep.
His full name, his date of birth, his photo, his address. He lived a block and a half away from Ashley's house.
Right.
And we also know he's been lying. He has the Scott Peterson goatee and frosted tips. It's like, why, what?
And we can also put them together, this Mike Gargiulo guy.
And we actually have a photograph taken of Ashley and her immediate close friends. And in the back is a picture of Mike Gargiulo. He's at the party.
He's in the photo.
He's in the photo.
We see a picture of a party at Ashley's. This is wild.
He's being such a creeper.
So it's Ashley and all of her friends, like, all holding each other like it's the cover of, like, a Friends DVD, right?
So you're probably thinking, is this an Oxima commercial? Sorry, clueless. But they're all just, like, having a great time. And behind them, like, almost in the curtains of her window.
Literally looking like the ghost from Three Men and a Baby, if you know, you know. No, you don't know. don't know.
Why have I not seen a single movie?
I really don't know.
This is the episode where I haven't seen a single solitary movie.
Fam, do you all know about the ghost in Three Men and a Baby? YouTube it. You'll see it. There's like a thing where there's like a phantom ghost in the background. And then like
in The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, but we found out later it's like a cardboard cutout of like Ted Danson. But I know.
Ted Danson. What a head of hair on that guy, you know?
To this day, he's got that head of hair. Yeah. To this day. I saw Gutenberg on the street the other day.
You saw who?
Steve Gutenberg.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you name the third dad from Three Men and a Baby? Tom Selleck.
Oh, Tom Selleck,
what
of course.
What is wrong with you?
Real good heads of hair.
Real good heads
across
of hair.
Across the board.
Do you know the name of the sequel?
Say the name of the first movie?
Three Men and a Baby.
And it's like Three Men and a Little Lady, right?
You did it! Three Men and a Little Lady. And you know what? They're all great. They're great movies.
Yeah?
They're really, really good movies.
All right. I'll take your word on it. Okay, I don't think I'm going to commit. No. You know?
Like, between recordings today, you're not going to call Mike and be like, hey, can you fire up that Three Men and a Baby DVD?
No.
You're not going to do that.
Shockingly.
No.
I have Dude, Where's My Car to watch.
It's true. You do have Dude, Where's My Car.
So they're like, all right, let's go pick him up. Like...
Okay, sorry.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
So Ashley's friends ID him as Mike the Furnace Guy, this creeper who's been like storming into Ashley's house and demanding to see her and being a fucking creep. But Mike is in the wind and the cops can't find him.
Once again, he was Mike the Furnace Guy. Then Ashley gets murdered. He disappears. He's back as Tony for 5 minutes and now he's gone again.
To brag about the thing that catches him.
Yeah.
It's like when serial killers get caught because they didn't pay their fucking... parking tickets.
Oh, it's always the taillight. It's always the taillight.
Unless you're, who was it, Bundy? And they were just like, go on your way, sir. Someone literally had remains in the car and they were like, oh, it's just a taillight.
Oh, and Jeffrey Dahmer. My God.
They gave that kid back to him. They gave that kid back to him.
I know.
So now Mike is in the wind and they're like, oh, well. So now it's fall of 2002. Cops from Illinois come to LA about a murder from 1993.
The victim's name, she's 18-year-old Trisha Picaccio.
Right. Now, Detective Lou is on
love,
the scene.
Pour one out for Detective Lou. I love Detective Lou.
I have to tell you, I know what you're thinking, everyone. These cops work together really well.
It's
no
true.
Jurisdiction issues here. They're
you're
like,
right.
Let's get to the bottom. Let's get justice for these victims. Let's get this son of a bitch.
Yes.
And they actually work together.
Because what happened was the case from Illinois is a little over 7 years old. And Detective Lou is out there looking for their guy. The guy that they were not able to find in Illinois, they hear he's out in Hollywood. Detective Lou is sitting in a cubicle next to Detective Tom, who's working on the Ashley case.
We were down to two people that were considered persons of interest in the case.
I said, who are they looking for? Maybe we do some prep work.
And I said, Mike Gargiulo. And Tommy said, who did you just say?
Michael Gargiulo.
Tom's like, my guy's Mike Gargiulo.
Yeah.
So could it be the same? Yes, it is, everyone.
It's the same guy. They're looking for the same guy.
But Trisha, like, these cases are very...
I just made the point. I wanted to point out, this is why we all can't work from home all the time, you guys. We got to come back to the office a little bit because sometimes the office interplay makes a big difference. Do you know what I mean?
Why are you saying this to me like that? Is it because I didn't see Dude, Where's My Car? You're mad at me? You're taking it out on me now with these very pointed statements?
No, yeah. See a good movie once in a while.
I've seen plenty. I've seen good movies. I've seen bad movies. I've loved bad movies.
Me too.
Do you know what I mean?
What's your favorite bad movie?
You know what? I don't know. Now that I said it, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to think of one.
Uh-huh.
Give me a bad movie that is sort of like good, you know.
A bad movie that people like? Oh, God. Now I can't think of anything.
Well, you know what? They're not bad if we like them. How about that?
How about this?
Art is subjective.
I would say like Halloween, Friday the 13th. I love
Halloween is a great fucking movie. That's not a bad movie.
Okay, well, I stand corrected.
I watch it every year.
Holy shit.
So good.
Okay, it's great. It's really good.
It's really great.
It's my favorite movie.
I'm just saying.
So we get the Trisha Picaccio backstory. She was a great kid. Detective Lou is like any parent would be thrilled to have her because she didn't drink or smoke. It was August 14th, 1993. It was like the last night of high school and all the friends were going out together. And
it was like before they all go to college. Yes. So this was like the last night everyone was home before people start going away. And Trisha was like very much like Ashley, vivacious and smart and caring and friendly. So it's one of the last nights before everyone goes off to college. Trisha heads home around midnight. She gives people rides home.
Yeah.
And while she's walking into her own house, like her parents are inside.
She like is on her front porch.
Trisha was stabbed 12 times in the chest, back, abdomen, and arm.
What did that scene tell you?
Whoever was there must have felt somewhat comfortable in being in that neighborhood, because the chances of somebody seeing you were tremendous.
This means they were comfortable there.
Yes.
This person knew her because it was really personal.
I mean, she was stabbed 18 times in the chest, the back, the abdomen, the arm. They said like the killer broke her arm just pulling her to the area where he wanted to do this to her.
And they're saying, like, once you're looking at it side by side and we know we're looking for the same guy, like, you could see this is how he started.
And can I just say, like, this is so tragic. The family didn't even find her until the next morning because it was a really hot night and they had all these window air conditioner units going. It was so, even the dog didn't hear
it. Yeah. And so they're like, okay. Once again, the killer didn't leave any evidence, but they must have known her.
Right.
And he must have known the neighborhood. It's a tight-knit area. And now in 1993, DNA was not, it was like new. And it wasn't really used in Illinois. It was sort of like spreading throughout the country.
Or anywhere. Like 1993. Like, I wanted to say too, like, this killer was so comfortable in this neighborhood. There was a pool party happening across the street with people outside. And he did this brutal murder that could not have been fast.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So even in 2002, there were a lot of advances with DNA.
Yeah. And Lou, by the way, said he went on record with his chief. He was like, I will die trying to solve this case. There will be no retirement for me.
This is his case.
This is it. And he will never retire until he solves it.
So they have something from under Trisha's fingernails.
Yes.
And it's an unknown male. So now it's 2002 and they're going back and reinvestigating everything. They're talking to everyone again. They're getting DNA from everyone again. But the Illinois cops can't find Mike Gargiulo, and that's why they're in LA, and now it's all coming together.
Exactly. They took swabs from over 20 people, but he was the only one they couldn't track down. And we learned that Gargiulo, remember, he was really comfortable. He must have known her. Gargiulo knew Trisha's brother very well. They were on the football team together, and they were really good friends. And he lived one block away, the same thing as the Ashley murder in LA.
And Mike had a criminal record even in high school.
Mike was a very hot-tempered, violent kid when he was growing up. He's very strong. He worked out a lot. I interviewed kids that he went to high school with, kids that he got in fights with and beat up. He was just a violent type person.
He was really strong and he was violent and he was beating people up. So remember, all of these cops are on this case years later and they're putting things together.
Yes. And like the MO is the same. It's like an attractive young girl stabbed brutally over and over.
Right.
He lived right next door, essentially.
And like knew her. Even though like it was different because he was friends with Trisha's brother. He knew the family. He was probably going over there for dinner. But Ashley, he was like forcing himself into her circle.
Yeah.
But he was still in his mind, like obsessed with her.
Right.
And I'm sure Trisha was not interested in him and he was. This is how it all starts. Ashley's not interested in him.
Exactly.
So I'm sure she, like, he had a crush on his friend's sister. And Trisha was like, fuck you. I'm awesome. I'm going to college.
Yes.
Like, you're a violent creep. I'm not into you. And, like, here we are.
So Lou, from Illinois, was able to track down Gargiulo's brother.
Yeah.
And through the brother, was able to talk to him on the phone. And that's when he learned that he moved to Hollywood. And so that's why Lou is out there. And Gargiulo has promised to make himself available for an interview and for the DNA swap. And Lou, knowing that this is probably the guy, is like, we just want to rule you out, bro. Like, you know what I mean?
So the cops track him down.
So what does he do instead of being cooperative? He bolts and runs and tries to bust through these guys. Then they got into a knockdown on the street and they had to take him down.
He fought with the LA police officers and two of them went to the hospital for treatment.
This guy is so strong that he hospitalizes two cops out of a team of like four.
Yeah. So meanwhile, though, they search the killer's house. And it's like super bare. It has like one kitchen table, one chair.
Literally nothing in there until they go to the bedroom.
Which is full of, and I quote, ghoulish dolls with like bloody women. Like, what the fuck?
Like, he had old timey Annabelle dolls.
He's a serial killer, this guy.
Like,
an actual serial killer. And he lives in a stereotypical serial killer house with one chair at the like rinky-dink kitchen table and then a bedroom full of dolls that he wanted to like look like they'd been brutally attacked.
Right. And like what I don't understand about this guy is that like he's a fit young guy who's able to hold a job. We learned he's like working as a bouncer and he's like in... Why can't he just function in society? You know what I mean?
It's not about that.
I guess.
It's not about that.
Like, he so easily could have just, like...
You could have just been nice and respectful.
Right.
Like, those are options, too.
Yeah.
But not for this guy.
Not for this guy.
So they, like, finally get him, and they're taking the killer to the station. And he's like, hey!
What?
While
gotcha.
I have you...
And he would ask him, like, how long does DNA stay on a body? If you had a case that was over 10 years old and there's maybe some blood on keys, could you get DNA off of that? Of course, our detectives just listened, wrote it all down.
How long does DNA stay on a body?
Right.
And they're like, almost drove off the road.
Yeah.
Did you get caught with DNA that maybe they didn't have in 1993? Like, is that anything?
And the cops are playing it cool, cool, cool. They're just making mental notes of everything he's asking them.
But they don't have a warrant to arrest him.
Right.
All they can do right now is collect his DNA.
Remember, there was no DNA at the Ashley crime scene. So they send the DNA to Chicago, where Trisha's case was. Lou submits it to the lab. Bingo. They got the guy.
And they don't press charges, and here's why. One of his idiot friends made a statement in 1993, and he's like, yeah, well, Trisha was in the car with the killer for like 30 seconds. He gave her a ride, and like, that's why her DNA is in his car.
2 days before.
Yeah.
Detective Lou is like, right, so Trisha was in the car with the killer 2 days before. She was also in a car with like 8 other people the night of,
right.
And none of their DNA is anywhere on her body.
Now,
so you're saying that his DNA got under her fingernails 2 days ago, but all the people she was with hugging and kissing and saying like their final goodbyes.
It was a celebratory goodbye night.
None of their DNA is anywhere on her, but this still rules out the killer from 2 days ago.
And the state's attorney's like, yup, because the state's attorney refuses to move forward and won't file a murder charge. Now, I'm furious. And our Chicago cop is like, Jillian, please, like, relax.
Yeah.
Because if we screw up this case, we can't try him again.
Right.
So they're like, we need more evidence to get this guy, especially because he knows we killed Ashley. So, Jillian, be patient. But I'm like, right. I get to be mad, though, because this means that he's free to walk the streets of L.A. And then in 2005... the police get a call about another murder, the murder of Maria Bruno. She's 32 years old, so I get to be mad.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. At some point, we got to get him on whatever and just get him off the fucking street. You know what I mean? Because you know he's going to run his mouth. My God, we're going to learn later. He's telling everybody he's ever met that he killed Trisha.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like,
get him off the street at all costs.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Maria Bruno was born and raised in Central America. She came to the United States at a very young age. She was married for about 8 years. She's twins that are 2 years old, a three-year-old, and a five-year-old.
The cop is like, she was married for 7-8 years. She's got 2 or 3 kids. I'm like, could we have a little respect and get the exact actual situation? How hard would that be to find?
Yeah. Twins are 2 years old. She has a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Great.
There,
you
I
did it. But she and her husband were separated, and she just moved into a new apartment. She's excited to start this new chapter of her life. She's going to open her own business.
Yeah. Again, like, women who are doing great.
Yes.
And I think that's really important. Like, this guy can't handle it.
Right.
Like, they don't need him. They don't want him. They're doing...
Well, Dr. Romney is here eventually. And she, you know, Dr. Romney is, like, the famous, like, the narcissist, like, criminologist. She knows, you know, she's the expert. And she's saying...
These were women that he would place on a pedestal. They're all beautiful, beautiful young women. That he desired them. His desire made him powerless. He was going to get that power back in the most horrific way.
He had to get his status back by killing that? It's insane. So when they find Maria, like, she's just newly moved into the apartment. It's newly painted. It's newly carpeted. There are still tags on the household items she had just bought. And they find her nude and staged on her bed, having been stabbed 20 times and her throat cut in the same way as Ashley and Trisha.
Yeah. And no force entry, right? So no fingerprints, nothing that was, they say, far into the apartment, like nothing really out of place, other obviously than the murder scene. But they're looking for clues and evidence and they can't find any.
The one thing they do find is one of those like booties, one of those blue booties that you'd put over your shoe if you're like a repair person coming into a space. And one of those is found outside of her apartment. And there's a drop of blood on the sole of the booty and the blood is identified as Maria's.
Right. So her soon-to-be ex, Irving Bruno, made the 911 call because what he tells the cops is that they actually saw each other the night that she was murdered.
It's like kind of a sweet story. Like they're separated, but they're having a date night.
They like go out to sort of relive the good parts of their relationship.
Yeah.
They have drinks. They come back to her new place. They have sex. He leaves at 2 a.m. to go home. And the nanny was like staying up with the kids.
Yeah. She doesn't drive. So he was coming back a couple hours later to take her to work. And she's not like answering the door. She's not answering his calls. And he sees that her kitchen window is open. He climbs in through the window and finds her body.
And he's the one who calls 911. And he is eliminated as a suspect.
After a 15-hour interrogation.
Because it's just one of those situations where it's like, I'll talk to you for as long as I didn't do this. This is like where, you know, this woman who means so much to me. And I was there. It's going to look bad. I was there hours before this happened.
It's just like we often forget, like, you know, like they were separating, but like he's thinking maybe there's a chance we're going to get back together. They just had this like beautiful date night and then he finds her body.
I
like,
know.
Holy shit.
I know. So the cops talk to Maria's friends and they talk to her neighbors. And just a few days before her murder, Maria had a really scary experience.
This is insane. She's like standing in the living room of her new apartment.
After she had moved into the building within a matter of a week or so, she had her hands full. She was carrying something into her apartment from the parking lot. And when she turned around and she got inside of her apartment, there was a man standing there. And she kind of yelled at the guy like, "Who are you? What are you doing here? Get out of my damn apartment." And it turned out that he was a resident of the building and he actually lived across the courtyard from her.
She turns around and there's this like terrifying man standing in her living room having let himself in.
Yeah, because I think she was going in and out. She was still setting the place up. So like her door was open.
Can I just tell you, earlier today, it was like 2 p.m. and I was on a side street and there was just me and a woman like 10 feet in front of me. And all I could think to do was to get as far to her left, 10 feet behind her, so she could see me and know that I was, because I could see her kind of feel my presence.
She saw the shorts though, right?
You know what I mean? Who's going to be scared of a guy in these shorts? You know what I mean?
So handsome.
So handsome. But I was like, I do this all the time. If I'm ever like in an area alone with another woman who I'm walking behind, I try to get in their eye line so they know that I know that they can see me.
Yeah.
And this piece of shit is like intentionally terrifying her because she's got her back turned and then she turns around and he's like in the middle of her living room.
And this is what this guy does, right?
Yeah.
He like invades their space. Trisha was on her front doorstep. He just keeps walking into Ashley's house. He's walking into Maria's new apartment. Like he has to take over their boundaries.
Yes.
It's infuriating.
Yes. It's just a way of like, it's a way of like exerting his authority or whatever.
And once again, he lived right there. He was a resident of this apartment complex. He lived across the courtyard from her.
Just like with Trisha, he lived down the block. Just like with Ashley, he lived 100 feet away.
Right.
He lives right across the courtyard from Maria.
So we will, right now the cops are like, we can't identify this guy. This is the killer. It's all the same guy, right?
They don't know that it's him, but this is what
this
happened.
This is it. Yeah. But now, meanwhile,
Gargiulo at this point was living a double life. He was married. He had a child. He seemed like a normal guy who was friendly and approachable, and nobody suspected that he was actively stalking women.
And he's described as like friendly and approachable. And I'm like, really? Because every single photo we see of him, he's scowling and he looks terrified.
Yes.
Or he's creeping in the back of like actual friends having a good time.
But this, I forgot this part. Cause like, this is what I was talking about. It's like, he could have assimilated into society. Like he's married and had a kid. Yeah.
He's probably like going to the soccer games and stuff, you know, but this is what they do. Like that's the mask.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It's like that like Superman thing where, or like, you know, like Bruce Wayne is the disguise. Batman is, you know, like Superman is who he is, but Clark Kent is the disguise, right?
Yeah.
But this guy does it only like
in reverse.
The good loving father and husband is the mask.
Exactly.
So April 28th, 2008. Michelle Murphy, fucking hero,
yeah,
calls police.
Frantic.
She has been attacked by what they say is a knife-wielding intruder.
And, like, listen to how terrifying this... This is everyone's worst nightmare.
She'd
been in bed. It was 11 o'clock at night. She's in bed. She's sound asleep. It's a hot night, so she left her window open. Now, her apartment was behind a fucking wrought iron gate. So, like, whoever the killer was had to climb this wrought iron gate. She thought she was safe.
And was stalking her.
Yes.
Because this is what he does.
So he climbed over the gate, lets himself in through her open window, unlocks the front door so he's got a path to get out, goes into her bedroom, straddles her, and starts stabbing her. She's asleep. She wakes up to being stabbed.
And fights him off. So he's stabbing her a lot of times, but because she's fighting, and I, all of the other women also fought, but in this instance, he cuts himself too.
Right.
She was able to fight this bastard off. She was able to get her feet under her and kick him in the groin area, and he fell off the bed. He stands up. He's still got the knife. And he looks at her and says, "I'm sorry." And he runs out the door.
Stands up, apologizes to her.
Still holding the knife. He could have gone back in for the kill, but didn't.
And runs out the door.
Yeah, leaving a trail of blood behind him on the way out.
Guess whose blood it is?
It's the killer, Gargiulio.
Right, right. He lives 30 feet from her.
30 feet from her.
So June 6, 2008, he's arrested.
Yeah.
And he's charged with attempted murder, and he's held on like $1 million bail. They know he also killed Ashley and Maria and Trisha.
Yes.
But they're trying to say, okay, they're using this case because we have Michelle.
Right.
We have blood there. They're using this as the catalyst to tie everything together.
And remember, it's harder to tie him to Ashley and Maria because there was no evidence, there was no clues, but they do have DNA from Trisha.
But they also, if they don't have DNA, they have Ashley's friends being like, oh, that's creepy, Mike, the furnace guy who was stalking our friend and walking into my apartment unannounced and refusing to leave.
Exactly.
So that's how they're using that with these IDs.
Yeah, because like when they take the photo of Gargiulio to one of Ashley's friends who helped plan the party where he's like skulking, lurking in the background. When she saw the picture that they wanted to show her, they say she went into the fetal position. Yes. That's how scary this guy was to this woman.
Right. So, but it's all, again, young women, attractive, very violent attacks. And they were just like, again, like independent. Or, you know, Trisha was going off to college.
Yes.
She was leaving him in some way. Ashley was not interested. You know, like, it's just all the same shit. This is the guy. So September 4th, 2008, he is charged with the murders of Ashley Ellerin and Maria Bruno and the attempted murder of Michelle Murphy. But what about Trisha, right?
Right.
So this case is getting a lot of attention.
But media interest in the case heats up even more when Hollywood A-lister Ashton Kutcher appears at a pretrial hearing and reveals what he saw the night Ashley Ellerin was murdered.
Ashton Kutcher's presence really kind of means everything. His name was usually mentioned very high in every story about the case, but a lot of news outlets went for him and then stayed because it was a compelling case that did sort of deserve the coverage.
Shows are being made about it. 48 Hours does a special on this case.
Yes. And this is where, by the way, this is where they dub him the Hollywood Ripper.
Right, which is another, like, people are like, ooh, that's, you know, I want to give a shit about that. And Ashton Kutcher's here, like, wow, what is he wearing?
With a mustache. Like, I mean, he's got a mustache.
Break.
It doesn't look
This is 2008,
good.
Like, whatever.
I know.
So, I don't know what I have against 2008. Was that a good year? I don't know. But 48 Hours is the special about the killer and basically says, like, he definitely killed Trisha Picaccio, but he can't be connected to it. So, like, 48 Hours puts this out into the world, and someone sees this and is like, I know this son of a bitch.
Yes.
We worked together, and he told me what he did to Trisha.
Right. So, remember, they had DNA from under her fingernails, and they run the DNA.
Also, being in a car with someone does not equate to getting their DNA under your fingernails. Give me a break.
Exactly.
Give me a break.
Right. So they get him. So now they're able, so, you know, 18 years after her death, he's charged with her murder.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu. With new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Now, 2012, the killer is on trial in Los Angeles. This idiot decides to represent himself in court. Go forth and stay stupid.
But the thing that's so frustrating about that is it's just a delay tactic. So,
and it's a way for him to look at the discovery and look at all the photos a la Ted Bundy.
And have the photos in his jail cell. Like, they're, like, the prosecution is saying, like, we had to litigate so he couldn't have, like, his murder porn.
He's sick.
But they're saying that, like, he's able to delay because they know he's going to get the death sentence in California. And so they're saying that, like, representing himself and firing the five attorneys that had been on the case in the years up till now.
Gargiulo has created a way to delay his trial almost indefinitely.
Throughout that entire almost decade of delays, the government repeatedly announced that they were prepared and ready to go to trial.
Judge Fiddler was assigned. He said, we're setting a trial date and no more games. That's when he backed off representing himself and went with his new attorneys.
Finally, they say the judge is like, well, we're setting a court date. And that's when he, like, gives up the idea of representing himself and hires a legal team. But can you imagine you're Michelle, the one that he attacked and survived, and you have to go testify against him? And
she's the star witness.
But imagine in a circumstance, this isn't what ends up happening, but I'm just thinking, because by the time they get to trial, he's not representing himself anymore.
Right.
But if he had been, the guy that attacked you in the middle of the night and tried to kill you is now standing 3 feet from your face. Like, how? Nobody would do that. I wouldn't do it.
I mean, she's amazing.
Yeah.
She was sound asleep and fought
woke
him off.
Up to him straddling her and stabbing her.
It's unbelievable. Now, this is one of those trials where the defense is allowed to suggest other suspects. Sometimes
yes.
that is allowed, sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
Because that's all the defense does.
Yeah, right.
It's like, well, it wasn't him, but it was, you know, they're just trying to point fingers at the husbands, the boyfriends, the friends, whatever.
Yeah, not roommate. Ashton Kutcher. Nobody thinks Ashton did it. But
Fred Wine Ashton? I'm not buying it.
Wild theory that you're...
I just don't buy it. There was blood on the ceiling. There was blood everywhere.
Uh-huh.
She's not answering, but there's spilled red wine. I'm telling you, even if he thought it was red wine, that's still a scary thing to see. What happened?
But
did
I
she
feel like
faint?
My thing is, like, I bet he didn't even get out of the car.
Maybe,
you know what
I
mean?
He didn't get that far.
Like, he probably was just honking from the driveway like a piece of shit.
3 hours
who starred
late.
In that incredible movie, Dude, Where's My Car?
The tour de force. So, fuck this guy.
After 4 days of deliberations, the jury finally returns on August 15th, 2019.
The clerk will read the verdicts.
We, the jury in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Michael Gargiulo, guilty of the crime of first-degree murder.
Guilty of the murder of Ashley Ellerin.
He's
guilty of the murder of Maria Bruno, the attempted murder of Michelle Murphy. He gets the death penalty, but he's appealing that a million times, right?
And they're saying it could go all the way to the Trump stacked Supreme Court.
Oh, God.
I know.
But once that is settled, all of those appeals with the death penalty, then he will stand trial for the murder of Trisha Boccaccio. So we did not forget about her.
Yeah.
The justice system, it's fucking broken, but at least she's on deck, I guess, to get justice or whatever.
But by the end of this thing, like, he still hasn't officially been sentenced?
So he's currently on death row.
Okay.
And he will hopefully be extradited to Chicago, to Illinois, to stand trial for Trisha Boccaccio's murder.
And there, you know, it kind of ends with everybody saying that, like, they think he did more.
Absolutely,
like,
he did.
You know what
Absolutely, he did.
How do you get away with that?
Like, I don't know what he was doing. I mean, obviously he was wearing those booties, but how was there no DNA? Was he wearing gloves?
Oh,
like,
right.
How was there no DNA on for anything? Not a hair? Because when it's so violent, you just, like...
Yeah.
I can't believe it, but we got him.
We got him.
We got him.
We got him.
But in 2019, like, there is no death penalty in California anymore. There's the moratorium.
Right. So he's just sitting on death row.
Yeah, he's, like, expected to be extradited to Illinois. That's what they say. So, like, he's... Eventually, I'm sure, and I don't know, hopefully we will hear news of, like, Trisha Boccaccio's trial has started.
Yeah. Oh, girl, we did. What's it called?
Well, it's one of those stupid things. It's like, you know, the Hollywood Ripper, whatever. But no, fuck that guy. It's called Fuck That Guy.
It's called Fuck That Guy.
It's wherever you stream your things.
It's wherever you stream your things. Fam, I want to remind you, the next virtual drag bingo is happening on June 15th. It's a Saturday evening. It's with the amazing Schwa. Tell them how fun it is.
We love Schwa. It's so fun. We make the playlist in real time,
uh-huh.
which is always my favorite thing to mention because it's so interactive and fun. The chat is on fire. You can use more than one bingo card.
I had four cards going last time, and I still didn't win. Not
once. I bet
once.
You won, but you can't keep track.
No, I was really doing it, but I was a little drunk by the end, so it was getting a little harder to do.
The point is, there are prizes and fun for all.
And it's for anybody at the $5 level or above on our Patreon.
And you don't have to worry about what kind of pants you're wearing, because it's all on Zoom. So you
That's
can be
true.
Pantsless if you choose
you
to be
may
pantsless.
Be. But also on the Patreon, you have access to over 450 full ad-free episodes to download and binge the minute you sign up.
Yep.
Tell them some of the series we've done.
Love Has Won, Twin Flames, Quiet on Set.
The Jinx Part 2.
Yep, The Jinx Part 2 is coming your way shortly.
I mean, that was, you know, we did Serial, we did the...
Lost Women of Highway 20.
Yeah, you know, The
Staircase.
It's
like one of the best true crime documentaries in recent, I mean, of our... It's like, it's top tier.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's really good. Also, fam, follow us on social media. It's True Crime Obsessed Podcast on Instagram and on TikTok. Aaron, our social media manager, takes the funniest moments from our episodes, from our recordings, because we record them on video as well, and he turns them into like really fun TikToks, and he's so talented, and it's like they're really fun. They're really good. What are we doing next, girl?
Oh my God. So we're doing Who Killed the Lion Sisters.
What is that?
This story's unbelievable. It's a case that's almost 50 years old.
Wow.
And the cops talk to the same suspect 9 times. Can I just tell you a quote
that
like gripped me and
Please.
Sort of explains what we're in for? The investigators were able, this is a quote from like one of our experts.
Yeah.
The investigators were able to piece together the truth while talking to someone who only told them lies. 50-year
oh
case,
God.
And they talk to the same lying piece of shit 9 times, and they, because they, there's always like a kernel of truth.
Yeah.
So it's how they use those to narrow down, to like figure out what he was actually saying the truth about, and then they fucking solve this like 50-year-old case. It is wild.
Amazing.
I've never seen a case like this before. It's really, really interesting how
All
they
right.
get the guy.
Fam, stay tuned for the trailer for that, and then, you know, our funny and hilarious outtakes. I think we got some good ones from this week.
Yeah.
If like, oddly, I think we got some good ones
it's
this
a
week.
A lot about your underwear.
Underpants. They're
Anyways.
Underpants. Ah, not me. Oh, my God. All right, fam. We love you.
We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Nearly 40 years ago, Catherine and Sheila Lyon went missing. That was March of 1975.
The two sisters were walking just a half mile from their home to Wheaton Plaza Mall in Montgomery County, Maryland.
Back in those days when parents were more casual about those things, the mother told them to be home by 4 p.m. They did not return.
Fewer than 1/100% of all missing children turn out to have been taken by a stranger. 2 children taken at the same time. Statistically speaking, it just doesn't happen.
A massive search effort came up empty. No bodies, no arrests. The trail went cold.
This was the first big story I had ever covered as a reporter. Over the next 40 years of my reporting and writing career, none of them stayed with me in the way that this one did.
The brides that he didn't walk down the aisle. The grandchildren we didn't have.
Parents were so scared, there was a dramatic shift in how they raised their children.
She kicks him in the nuts, the groin, whatever.
No, nuts is good. Nuts works for me.
Now, he has a goatee and frosted tips, to which I say, what in the Scott Peterson is this?
I know.
What in the Scott Peterson
what
is this?
What in the ever-loving Scott Peterson is this?
Like, so
is there any chance Scott Peterson didn't do it?
I can't talk about it.
Okay. Oh, God. Sometimes I really understand when the husbands are like, he's a lot.
Yeah. It's not always the husband.
You know what, it's everybody.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.